couple of weeks ago, Berto and I were in the Atlanta area visiting family. We had the opportunity to celebrate my dad's 80th birthday with my siblings and our in-laws. And it was a joyous occasion. And at the same time, we had heavier business to visit my dad's sister, my beloved Aunt Helen, who's in the process of dying right now. And we had 4 days in a row of having lovely visits with her, each one kind of different. One day she would be up and peppy and seemed like an energy we hadn't seen for days, and then other days sleeping 22 hours of the day. And there was a highlight of all those visits. There was a quiet moment. Berta was over in the corner in a chair, and it was just me and my aunt sitting there. And I had the chance to tell her how much I will miss her when she's gone. She was pretty lucid. She knows who I am. She has dementia. I said, I'll miss you so much when you're gone. And she opened her eyes quickly, and she looked right at me, and she said, I'll come visit you. And I, of course, you know, what gets better than that? And I said, how will I know it's you? And she said, you'll know, real quick. It was very fascinating. And then she said, don't worry if it takes a while. Just be patient. It will be different than you expect. Be different than you expect. So, of course, I found this comforting and enormously mysterious. Death, as it approaches, seems so final. And those of us who are in the process of losing or grieving someone who's died know that there is a quality to death's finality during our lifetimes that we have to reckon with. The body is gone. There is a sense of something that was being no longer. And it's easy, and a lot of people believe that that is the end, that death is the final end of this life, and that there is nothing afterwards. It makes me wonder, these words, and of course the gospel today, what difference does it make in our lives what we choose to believe about an afterlife? What happens if we choose to believe that there is something, some ongoingness? And what happens if we choose that there is nothing, that this is it? Jesus is very clear in his teachings that life is eternal, that death is not the end that we might think it is. He's always offering words of comfort. We say some of these at funerals. In my Father's house are many mansions, many places. For Jesus, resurrection is real, and Jesus, of course, in our story, he himself is resurrected. So we get a real encounter with resurrection happening in real time in those stories. So for Jesus, there's resurrection, and he was teaching this, and he wasn't unique in this teaching. But in Judaism, sort of like the way Christians believe different things today, and lots of people believe different things, there was debate on whether there was an afterlife or not. And the bulk of the Old Testament comes down on there's not really a very interesting afterlife. There's kind of a vague concept of it. It's called Sheol or Hades. When it's referenced, it's sort of kind of a gray place with not a whole lot going on. The psalmist, you might remember, there's three instances in the Psalms where the psalmist is asking for more life and asking for restoration and uses this sort of argument. You know, well, how am I going to praise you in Sheol? So there's this idea that whatever's happening in Sheol, that there is not a voice that can be praising. It's kind of a non-existence afterlife, but it's not nothing either. Some of the later writings of the Old Testament come up with a more a clearer notion that there is life, there is something that happens. So in some of the apocryphal readings, some of the readings that came later in the writings of the Jewish canon, there's this notion that life goes on. In 2 Maccabees there's this passage that says their bones shall rest in the earth and their spirits shall have much joy. So there's this sense that, okay, yes, death is final here, but something else happens. The Pharisees, who we hear a lot about, we hear about Sadducees today, and they don't believe in resurrection, as we heard clearly. The Pharisees did believe in resurrection. They believed that Josephus, the ancient historian, says that the Pharisees believe that every soul is imperishable, but only the soul of the good passes into another body, whereas the souls of the wicked are punished with eternal penalty. So now we're getting into, it seems like that as human beings go on, there's more and more details that we come up with about what this afterlife might be like, at least in the Judeo-Christian tradition. But again, the Sadducees, they don't believe in a resurrection. So they come on the scene this morning in our gospel, and they decide to set a trap for Jesus to sort of show the silliness of believing in resurrection. But Jesus kind of turns it on its head and kind of suggests that their notion of how they're understanding afterlife is actually the silly thing. It's not really their sense that that marriage is going to exist in the afterlife in the same way that it exists here is not what he's talking about. That misses the point. The idea that any of these structures that we have in our earthly life are going to continue on in the afterlife is a misunderstanding. It misses the point of what Jesus is trying to teach us. Coming back to my Aunt Helen, she left me wondering what her promised visit might look like. Would it be a whisper in my ear in the middle of the night? Would it be some powerful sense of her presence while I'm driving along in the car? What it won't be, though, is her knocking on my door and coming in and having tea in my house. That's not going to happen. And that's not going to happen. I think that sometimes we like to think of heaven in that way, too. Oh, it'll be so nice to sit down. And sort of like this ongoing, it's kind of like this life. It's like life, earth life plus, sort of an enhanced version of this earthly life. But we like to believe that or we can easily maybe only imagine that somehow it looks very much like this life. But Jesus is always trying to get us to imagine life in a bigger way. Of course, the life that he's trying to get us to live is this reign of God, where our life is not just our own. It's dedicated to a higher principle. It's dedicated to being of service to others. So I think in the same way that our notions of what this life is going to be like, Jesus is trying to expand that and say, your life's not about you. It's not just about you. It's about others. It's about God. It's about being a part of something that is big and mysterious. And in the same way, whatever afterlife is, whatever heaven is also some unimaginable thing. I think we can't even imagine what this life really is. So how can we possibly imagine what that life is? So he kind of does away with he kind of just skips over what the Sadducees are saying and turns it on its head and uses this mysterious language of, he says, those in the afterlife cannot die anymore because they are like angels and are children of God, being children of the resurrection. Well, what does that mean? We can only imagine. It's mysterious language. We don't know what it exactly is. So people come down on different sides, and I talk to lots of folks who say, followers of Jesus, people who are atheists, who say, this life is all you get. This life is all you get. And I think what we choose to believe, I guess in sort of like my recommendation to us, our invitation today, is I think to see how does what we believe about an afterlife make a difference in the life we live here now. So one thing is that it can give us comfort to imagine that there's some ongoingness. I love to think of my Aunt Helen coming to me in some way and feeling like that she's a part of some ongoing thing that I can feel here and now. That's very comforting and beautiful. Is that all there is? Is it just to make me comfortable? How does that make me do something else? I think of the Eucharistic prayers where we say, deliver us from coming to this table for solace only and not for strength, for pardon only and not for renewal. So if my idea of the afterlife is just, oh, there's some ongoing thing and that makes me feel better, I might be missing the point. There's something about how does it strengthen me? How does resurrection, which we celebrate at the table, how does that strengthen me to do something outside of myself? Pardon, forgiveness, a lovely thing. Okay, I feel right with God again. But renewal, renewal is about something outside of ourselves. I think one of the teachings that people who don't believe in an afterlife, one of the gifts that brings in a lot, what I've learned from them is that this is the life you have, and so you don't skip over it or poo-poo it as something that's not as nice as something that's coming on. Someone told me recently, oh, your aunt will soon be in a better place, and something just made me cringe about that. I mean, that's a lovely notion, but better place, what about just a different place? What about this is the place that this is the only life she's going to have that looks like this in this arrangement that we have of our close relationship? This is about to end in a certain way. The beautiful thing is that more life comes after that in a different way. But if the people who don't believe in any afterlife, I think help us dig in to this life with everything we have, and not to skip over it, to not do a spiritual bypass and just to be kind of rushing through this life in order to get to something that's going to be more beautiful. There's something heart-achingly lovely about what we can experience here in this life. And yet, I think without any sense of an ongoingness, without any sense of afterlife, that maybe there's not enough mystery. Maybe there's not enough, maybe what believing in the afterlife gives us, in addition to that personal sense of comfort, is a participation in the awe and the mystery of this life. The mystery of, or why are things beautiful? Why is there something called love? How do we participate in it? How do we live it more? To let that notion of an afterlife inspire us to dig in deeper also. So whether we believe or don't believe in an afterlife, I hope that it makes us dig down deep into what we have, to plumb the depths of this mysterious love that we're trying to manifest in our lives. After the service, we're going to be saying goodbye to a dying creature in our midst, the tree, the mountain ash tree that's right at the front gate, the beautiful old tree that's next to the church sign. And this tree is dying. This tree is at the end of its life. It's a one-of-a-kind tree. It's a part of the mountain ash family, but it's the only mountain ash that's ever going to be that one. It's never going to come back again. And yet, we might also ask, what's going to come next in that place? What's going to grow up in that stump? What new life will come in that place? How will this eternal, mysterious life that goes on and on beyond our imaginations be manifest at our front gate? And how blessed will we be if we get to find out, if we're given just a few more days of this age, of this life, to see what grows right in our front yard? Amen.